Hello and a very warm welcome to Centre Stage. It's great to have you with us. Now today we're going to talk about two countries whose Muslim population have been affected by violence. We're going to talk about Pakistan, and as you know, in 2012, unfortunately, 400 Muslims, Shiite Muslims, have been killed by violence in Pakistan. We're going to also talk about the Palestine of Asia. As you know, Myanmar has been referred to as Palestine of Asia because we know that the Rohingya Muslims have been persecuted very badly over the course of the last few years in Myanmar. So we're going to talk about that as well. And we'll try to find out any similarities between these two types of killings, whether Shiite or Sunni Muslims, unfortunately, innocent Muslims, are being killed in these two countries. It's great to have your company. Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now today we are delighted to be joined by two great guests. At the moment we have the pleasure of having Mr. Guljamal Hossain with us. Mr. Guljamal Hossain, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. Now let me just tell you that Mr. Guljamal Hossain is an established writer and of course political analyst, well versed in the issues pertaining to the region, particularly the countries around Pakistan, Myanmar and Asia, Southeast Asia, and he's also an established journalist working with Tehran Times. Now hopefully in the course of the next few minutes we'll have the pleasure of having Dr. Ahmad Al-Hashimi over the phone from Toronto with us. At the moment we don't have him, but I hope that we can have him as soon as possible. Stay with us, and after the break we'll be talking about the situation of Muslims, the sorry state of affairs in Pakistan affecting Shiite Muslims, and of course the state of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar who belong to the Sunni sect of Islam, our Sunni brothers and sisters. So please do stay with us.
Look at the most recent incidents of violence against Muslims, whether Shia or Sunni, in both Pakistan and Myanmar, reveals horrific cases. On March 3rd, over 45 people were killed and 150 others wounded in a car bomb attack carried out in Karachi. Women and children were among those killed and injured. On February 16th, a bomb attack targeting Shia Muslims in the main bazaar of the southwestern city of Quetta killed at least 90 people, including women and children, and injured more than 200 others. Also on January 10th, a twin bomb attack at a crowded billiard hall in Quetta, which is the capital of Baluchistan province, killed more than 90 people, mostly Shia Muslims. The assassination of Sibta Jafar, a prominent Shia poet, academic and social figure who was killed by pro-Taliban militants on March 18th, was one of the latest in a series of attacks on the Shia community in Pakistan over the past few weeks. Myanmar also continues to be the scene of crime against Muslims. On March 20th, over 40 people were killed and a number of mosques were burned due to religious violence in several towns in central Myanmar. Myanmar's Islamic Religious Affairs Council and the Myanmar Muslim National Affairs Organization later appealed to the government of President Thein Sein to take swift action to stop the violent attacks. On March 28th, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Myanmar, Thomas Oji Quintana, said he had received reports that soldiers and police sometimes stood by while atrocities have been committed before their very eyes by well-organized Buddhist mobs in the central city of Mektila. The Muslim minority of Rohingyas in Myanmar accounts for about 5% of the country's population of nearly 60 million, The persecuted minority has faced torture, neglect, and repression since the country achieved independence in 1948. Last year, scores of Rohingyas were killed when Buddhist extremists carried out atrocities against Muslims in the western city of Rakhine. Thousands of Rohingyas were also displaced. Irrespective of who's behind such barbaric attacks against Muslims, whether Shia or Sunni, one thing is certain. Such perpetrators, whatever they may call themselves, are only targeting defenseless civilians, which clearly reveals their evil intentions.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, I just want to read some headlines of the news over the course of the few weeks. The first March 18th, we had Seb Jafar, a prominent Shia poet, academic and social figure who was killed by pro-Taliban militants in Pakistan. March the 3rd, over 45 people killed and 150 others wounded in a car bomb attack carried out in Karachi. Women and children, unfortunately, were among those killed and injured. Now, February 16th, a bomb attack, we're going to the months of February, a bomb attack targeting Shia Muslims in the main bazaar of the southwestern city of Kota killed at least 90 people, including women and children. And Bashar was saying the list unfortunately continues. Who is really behind those attacks, do you think?
It is obvious, everyone knows, at least in Pakistan, that who is behind these killings. There is a notorious group called Lashkar-e-Jhangvi,
right,
which separated from Sipah-e-Sahaba Pakistan in 1996. And their leaders were in jail for many years. During General Musharraf's time, they were imprisoned. But during the previous government of Prime Minister Gilani and then Prime Minister Pervez Ashraf, there was actually a kind of a disregard to maintain law and order situation in the country. So these groups took advantage from insecurity, and they started committing atrocities against Shias. And second thing, their leader called Malik Ishaq, he was freed from prison last year because of lack of evidence. See, this group is so powerful and so threatening, and its reputation is such bad that there is difficulties. There are difficulties to present or to collect evidence against them.
Right.
This is the reason that this person. I think he is involved in some 20-some murders.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, when we look at the history of this group, Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, as you said, they were a part of Sipah-e-Sahaba, and then they became a faction which separated from them. And when we look at the history of violence against Shia Muslims, how far does it go back in history?
Oh, yeah, good. It doesn't go beyond 30 years and so. It all started when Pakistan joined United States proxy war against Soviet Union in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. At that time, United States, some other Western powers, and some Arab states, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and a couple of others, they established madrasas in Pakistan, in those areas especially which border Afghanistan. In that area, they established madrasas to train militants in order to fight against Russians, Soviet army in Afghanistan.
Right.
Because Pakistan's then military ruler, General Ziaul Haq, was told that this is not a war against Afghanistan, it's a war against Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Because after capturing Afghanistan, he was told and he was befooled that then Soviet army would capture Pakistan and capture its ports and Karachi, its biggest port. So this was the reason that Pakistan, under the rule of General Zia-ul-Haq, joined that alliance.
Right.
During this time, Saudi ideology, actually I should say, I don't know, they are not even proper Wahhabi or Salafi, I should say. So I prefer to call them a kind of, you know, Saudi ideology was exported to Pakistan in these madrasas.
So there were religious seminaries, it was not just trying to train militants, but also there were some religious aspects being...
They also also militants and also religious ideology.
Right.
This was the first time when sectarianism started and sectarian killing started in Pakistan. Because these people were trained as a strict version of Islam, that's the Saudi version of... so they then they started to consider other Muslims as infidels or something.
Right.
So it all started during the 1980s, early 80s, during the time of General Zia-ul-Haq.
So Sapah Sahaba actually was...
So indirectly, United States is involved in this, in creating these rifts. And Saudi Arabia is directly involved. Since that, since then, Saudi Arabia never stopped funding those madrasas. It's interesting. Still after 33 years or so, still Saudi Arabia is funding those madrasas. So this is...
So we still have those madrasas in Pakistan?
Yeah, still many of them, many of them. Not all, but I think 70 to 80% still exist there. So the, all this sectarian phenomena started in Pakistan during that time. Before that time, there was no such distinction in Pakistan. People do not know even... that who is Shia, who is Sunni, or who is Sufi, or who is something.
You know, on March the 1st, former Pakistan Interior Minister Rehman Malik said that actually Lashkar Ganjavi has been involved in 80% you know, of terrorist incidents in the country. This is a shocking figure, isn't it?
It looked somehow, I don't know what was the source of his information. Of course, he was Interior Minister, intelligence agencies was under him. But it looked a bit exaggerated because I don't think that Lashkar-e Jhangvi is such a big terrorist outfit. It's a small outfit, but with committed a group of extremists or terrorists. And they are allied, first they were allied with Al-Qaeda. And, now no more Al-Qaeda is there. When 2001, when Al-Qaeda was active, they were allied with them. Then they joined Taliban, Pakistani Taliban, which are also called Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan.
Right.
So they joined them. So indirectly, maybe I think, yes, indirectly it can be true that they are involved, they could be involved in more than 80% killings in Pakistan. And it's true.
Are they operating outside Pakistan as well?
No, they used to operate in Afghanistan in early years of so-called war on terror. But I don't think they are no more working in Afghanistan. They are only killing their own people in Pakistan mostly.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Okay. Now, let's take another short break. After the break, we hope that we can have Dr. Ahmad Al-Hashimi with us. So far, we haven't been successful to do so. So please do stay with Central Stage. Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. We're talking about Pakistan and the deadly attacks against Shiite Muslims there. Now, Human Rights Watch says more than 400 Shiites were killed in Pakistan in 2020. 12, and that was, so we're saying, the deadliest year for Shiite Muslims in Pakistan. Do you think that the year 2013 would be any better?
Unfortunately not. It might be, God forbid, it might be worse. There are reasons. Already, I think, more than 250 people.
Right.
And mostly, they were Shia Muslims. They have been killed during the three major attacks on Shia Muslims, two in Quetta, one in Karachi. So, no way, it looks this year is going to be worse. And there is another reason. There is a parliamentary elections in Pakistan after 45 days or so. And this organization, Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, it already said we would attack election rallies. Yeah, they announced a couple of weeks ago that we would attack people during election rallies. You know, during election time, the whole country becomes a soft target because people have to come out to participate in election rallies, and then on election day they have to come out to cast their ballots. And these people thought it's considered it a good opportunity to attack when the whole country would be, you know, outside their homes. And they were asked, what is the reason that you want to attack people, Muslims, other Muslims? They said, we don't believe in democracy, and we don't believe in a democratic system. They have such, not only that they are killing other, you know, they are killing Shia Muslims, they are also killing Sufi, you know, a soft version of Islam that is practiced in Pakistan and India and other places. They are also killing them, Shias, especially they are targeting Shias, especially their professionals.
Why is it that, I mean, there should be the hatred that is there is so much, isn't there? Because we see that victims also include women and children, so they probably couldn't have done anything to, you know, Lashkar Ganjvi or even Sapa Sahaba.
Yeah, it's hard to understand actually that what kind of mindset these people have, and what kind of brainwashing is done that they even and they feel proud to kill even women and children. Quetta, when nearly 100 people were killed once in one incident, 100 people killed in another incident. In both during both of the incidents, women and children were there, and Lashkar-e-Jhangvi's spokesman came and proudly claimed responsibility for that.
And they had the case in which there was a bus, and then they checked their ID cards, and those they found were Shiites were killed.
Yeah, exactly. They were actually pilgrims traveling towards Iran, and from Iran they want to go to Syria and Iraq. Yeah, it's hard to understand. It's a kind of, I don't know I can't understand it. But I can tell you this, that all this phenomena is not more than 3 decades old.
Right, so it's a new phenomenon.
Yeah, new phenomena, and somehow a result of a heavy Saudi investment in Pakistan.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, last month, Pakistan paramilitary forces said that they captured, in fact, 8 anti-Shia militants.
Yeah.
They also said that they seized their weapons. And there are some interesting figures I want to read to you.
Yeah.
You know, Colonel Maqbool Ahmad, a senior official of the paramilitary Frontier Corps force, told reporters in Quetta on March the 8th, quote, "Our troops raided a house in the Dasht suburb of Quetta and recovered a large quantity of arms and ammunition dumped underground in the courtyard of the house." He added that the weapons cache included 120 kilograms of explosives, and this number is very interesting, 1,000 explosive detonators, guns and rocket-propelled grenades.
Yeah.
This is only one example of the facilities that they've got. Who is financing these terrorists, do you think?
Now, actually, in that part of Pakistan, especially Quetta, and especially in that city, there is a chaos rules there. many groups are working there. One,
right.
Pakistani Taliban, who are fighting against US-led forces in Afghanistan, and also Pakistan's security forces, because they consider that Pakistani security forces are helping US and others. And then there is a bloody insurgency going on in Balochistan province of Pakistan.
Right.
So, and then these people, Lashkar-e-Jhangvi people are there. So, it's near tribal areas of Pakistan. In tribal areas, you can have weapons, you can have explosive. It's a kind of a semi-autonomous region. So, Pakistani law only partially implies there. So it's easy for them to get any kind of weapon there. As far as finance is concerned, definitely Saudis are providing a lot of funds. And it's interesting that as there is a chaos in that part of Pakistan, so Pakistan's many enemies are also exploiting these situations. Some of them, they don't want to see stability. So. And especially one reason is also that you know, Iran Pakistan gas pipeline, its route is from that Balochistan province, so many people who don't want this gas pipeline project to go through, they are also working to create instability in that in right. that region. So indirectly many analysts say that CIA is involved, Mossad is involved, many other agents are involved to create instability in that part.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for those comments. Now, let's take another short break. After the break, we'll be talking about some other issues affecting Pakistani Shiites. And we'll, of course, be talking about the situation of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. So please do stay with Center Stage. Hello again. It's great to have you back with us. We're talking about Pakistan and the situation of Shiite Muslims there. And so far we talked about the very notorious terrorist group. They call themselves Muslims, but I think that has nothing to do with Islam, does it?
Yeah, no. No, not at all, because it's a kind of cult. It's a strange cult. Now we cannot call them Muslims because to kill other Muslims, Quran says if you kill one person, you kill the whole humanity. So when they are claiming killings of women and children and innocent Muslims, how they can be called Muslims? But I want to go back the history of this group a little bit more. All started because Pakistan has, I wrote once that Pakistan has two twin evils. One is Taliban, and second is feudal system in Pakistan. Yeah, feudal system is as evil as Taliban or pro-Taliban militants. What feudal system does, it's it creates oppressed societies. So there is one is oppressor, and other is oppressed.
By feudal, are you talking about lands, or it includes factories and establishments, industries, or is it, are we just talking about the land?
No, there are new they're called new feudals. The feudal lords, which you know, traditionally they hold lands. They were created by British Empire when the British used to rule India. So big tracts of lands were given to peoples who were loyal to the British. So they hold big properties, and what was their duty? To oppress their own people and to show loyalty to the British. So these people were created then. Many of them sold their properties and established factories and stuff. but their mindset didn't change. Mm-hmm. So how this group actually came to into being, it's very interesting. First, Sipah Sahaba itself, General Ziaulak and Saudis funded it and stuff. But once, I don't know how, they thought of fighting an election in one city of Pakistan. So they fought election against that region's feudal lords,
right,
who were incidentally Shia. Those feudals, feudal lords were Shias. And they got somehow that man, leader of Sipah Sahaba, got killed. Somehow, this is what is said.
By the Shia feudals.
Yes, yes. So once these people thought that Shias killed their leader, but it was not the reason. The reason was that feudal killed him. Feudal, you know, that kind of mindset doesn't have any religion at all. So they decided to take revenge against Shia, ordinary Shia Muslims, not feudal lords and these factory owners and stuff. So when this group, the main group, Sipah Sahaba, declined, some people separated from that group and established a military wing. They were involved in many, terrorist incidents against Shia Muslims, and it's very pathetic that they started killing doctors, nurses, engineers, poets, writers, journalists, lawyers.
But not feudals.
Not feudals. Those feudals are still there, so they cannot do anything to them. For what they did, they killed, the cream of a society. These professionals are cream of a society. So they started killing them, and this thing is going on for 20 years or so.
Right.
During Musharraf's time, General Musharraf's time, I always appreciated this, that during his time, he was somehow having this realization that, state needs to implement it writ. There should be writ of the state.
Right.
So during his time, sectarian killings, declined to lowest levels. And he was aware that courts cannot get proper evidence against these people. So he sent forces that go and, and somehow he asked intelligence agencies to eliminate them.
Right.
And during his times, many, even during extrajudicial, killings were happened. But this, because of these mayors, sectarian killings declined.
But you're saying that there is no evidence against them, but they themselves are actually saying that we want to kill Shiites.
Yeah.
So what what a better evidence than themselves saying that?
Yeah, but this is only a tape record or a video. Court asked more solid evidence. So when it comes to present solid evidence, this group and Sipah Sahaba, they work like mafias, like a mafia in a mega city. So they destroy evidence, they threaten people who can be witness or potential witness. Then they threaten security forces, officers, families,
right,
judges' families, lawyers' families who would, fight against them. So it's a kind of terror situation. And I tell you one interesting thing, that even politicians, no big politicians dare to say anything publicly against them. Privately, they all condemn them,
right,
they all hate them, they all call them terrorists. But publicly, nobody dare to say anything except, and this person might be Pakistan's next prime minister in this election, Right now he is the second most popular politician in Pakistan.
But right.
Many analysts say that he might overshadow the most popular one. The most popular one is Mr. Nawaz Sharif of Pakistan Muslim League, and this one is Imran Khan of Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf. He was the first politician, and this is the this is one of the reasons that he became so popular in Pakistan, that he spoke publicly against this group. He said there is no place for terrorists in a society. So terrorists should be eliminated, should be dealt with force, because you cannot negotiate with these people. What do you negotiate? They say all Shia Muslims, all Sufi Muslims.
So why are the others so afraid of such a group? I mean, is it because they somehow related to this group, or is it because they actually fear their lives?
No, they fear for their lives. Pakistan, Nawaz Sharif's party, Pakistan Muslim League, they are, you know, near Saudis. When General Musharraf took power in a bloodless coup, so where they took refuge, they took refuge in Saudi Arabia. So they are pro-Saudi, they are considered pro-Saudis. So this is one reason they never spoke against them, and they never took any action against them. But they are also afraid. It's not the only reason. The fear for life is, I think, most important factor.
Great. Yeah. Thanks very much indeed. Yeah. Now I'm just told that we have now Dr. Ahmad Al-Hashimi with us. Dr. Ahmad Al-Hashimi, it's a great pleasure to have you with us on Center Stage.
Mr. Vijani, pleasure is mine. Thank you very much for catching up at this last moment.
Great to have you with us. Now, Dr. Al-Hashimi, we're talking here in our Tehran studio with our knowledgeable guest, Mr. Jamal Golhossein, about the situation in Pakistan. And if you agree, we'll move to the situation of Rohingya Muslims. But if you want to mention any point about Pakistan, please go ahead, and then we'll start talking about the situation of Muslims in Myanmar.
The situation in Pakistan is a very dire one. The sovereignty of the nation of 173 million Muslims mainly has been infringed by the big powers more than once. And this sectarian violence is very unfortunate, and I am hoping that the Muslims worldwide would do something to save that nation from falling into the pit of sectarian killings. And as you are aware, till now, the Shia Muslim scholars have restrained themselves, and they said that despite all this bloodshed, the Shia shouldn't resort to force and counter-killing. Immaterial if the Shia are a majority in Iraq, such as an example, or minority in Pakistan, these Muslim scholars have to keep the upper moral ground and save the Muslims from the unnecessary bloodbath. It is unfortunate to hear that a person such as Jafar Zaidi, who was the dean of a college in Karachi, to be the last victim of this violence. The Pakistanis who are aware, they say, unfortunately, that country is being offered for sale because of the corruption which has reached to the bone. They are hoping for the election, which is going to take place in a month time, and hopefully the central government can demonstrate some power to support the efforts of those who would like to save that Muslim country safe and sound. And I am crossing my fingers that hopefully a politician who enjoys the support of the majority of the Pakistanis will come to power among the three contesting parties which are running for this election in May.
Great. Thank you very much for those comments. Unfortunately, we just have 2 minutes to the end of the show. We wanted to talk about the situation of Rohingya Muslims, but I think in just less than 2 minutes, we can't do justice to the horrible situation of Rohingya Muslims. So, Dr. Ahmad Al-Hashimi, let me put another question about the plight of Shiite Muslims in Pakistan to you. We know that some terrorist groups, particularly Lashkar-e-Jangvi has been involved in the killings of Muslims. And here, Mr. Hussain was saying that one of the reasons that they're not brought to justice is because of the lack of evidence. What's your take on that?
This is unjustifiable reasoning for a systematic killing. If you study the history of the sectarian strife in Pakistan, you can take it back to the days of Zia-ul-Haq. When Zia-ul-Haq had his coup d'etat against Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto, he empowered all these groups. In those years, 1980s, what is called Sahaba, Sipaha Sahaba, was active. Claiming that they are the defenders of the companions of the Prophet and bringing it down again as the Shia, that the Shia, some of them are fanatic and they curse the Sahaba. And as you know, the majority of the Shias are far away from falling to such a pitfall. So the Sipaha Sahaba was the father of this group, LEJ. The other Talibani offshoot in Pakistan has some strongholds in the city of Karachi, which is 20 plus million in population. And most of the atrocities you see
Dr.
are
Al-Hashimi,
Karachi, unfortunately.
Thank you very much. We just have less than 30 seconds to the end of the show. I do apologize, but it was great to have you with us for the very last moments of our show. And thank you very much indeed to Mr. Hussain. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guest, Dr. Ahmad Al-Hashimi, the founding director of our Ihsan Muslim Heritage Society, and of course, we had Mr. Guljamas Hussain, established journalist and political analyst. It was great to have you with us. Thanks very much indeed for talking to us, for those insights, and of course, for those words of wisdom. So we hope that we can talk about the situation of Rohingya Muslims next time. Thank you very much for watching, and have a great week. Thank you very much. Thank you.